Hello, and welcome to My Career in Data, a podcast where we discuss with industry leaders and experts how they have built their careers. I'm your host, Shannon Kemp, and today we're talking to Nan McDonald from Mathematica and Northwestern University.
With a robust catalog of courses offered on demand and industry-leading live online sessions throughout the year, the Dataversity Training Center is your launchpad for career success. Browse the complete catalog at training.dataversity.net and use code DVTALKS for 20% off your purchase.
Hello and welcome. My name is Shannon Kemp and I'm the Chief Digital Officer at Dataversity, and this is My Career in Data, a Dataversity Talks podcast dedicated to learning from those who have careers in data management, to understand how they got there, and to talk with people who help make those careers a little bit easier. To keep up to date in the latest in data management education, go to dataversity.net/subscribe. Today, we are joined by Nan McDonald, the Director of Data Innovation at Mathematica and the Chief of Data Operations at the Institute for AI in Medicine and Northwestern University. And normally, this is where a podcast host would read a short bio of the guest, but in this podcast, your bio is what we're here to talk about. Nan, hello and welcome.
Hi, Shannon. How are you?
Good. It's so nice to meet you, and I'm so excited to hear your story because, wow, that is a mouthful of titles and a couple of jobs you're doing.
Yeah, it's definitely unusual, and we'll talk through it, but my career path is also rather unusual. So I think what it allows is sort of that intersection of different worlds that, academia and business and policy. And so I'm really excited to delve into that.
Oh, very, very nice. We'll start with job one. So you're the Director of Data Innovation at Mathematica. So tell me, what type of business is Mathematica?
Sure. So Mathematica is a policy research and data analytics shop. A lot of the work we do is for federal, state, and local governments around using evidence and data to help them figure out what policies and programs are effective. And so, you know, the part of the reason why I love Mathematica so much is that they have a vision for shaping an equitable and just world where evidence drives decisions for global impact. So that means that it's everything that I've wanted to do my entire career.
Oh, that's very, very cool. I love that you're doing what you want. Well, we'll get into how you got into there in a minute here. But so let's go to your second job and your second job title. So Northwestern University is a fairly well-known higher ed university here in the United States. So you're the Chief of Data Operations at the Institute for AI in Medicine at Northwestern. So tell me about that. What is the Institute for AI in Medicine?
Yeah, sure. So we, for institutions, research institutions like Northwestern, we use institutes as sort of like an organizing body to bring together different perspectives of research. And so think of us as like a glue that holds all of these different areas of research together. We have 7 centers, and each center is sort of doing their own set of research. And our job is to essentially be the bridge that allows all of those centers to collaborate together. We provide some administrative support as well. We organize events. We help them with, you know, like when they want to write a grant where they want to, you know, bring together multiple different centers together, we help coordinate that. So it's just really a fancy title for being a bridge builder across the different areas of research.
Oh, that's very cool. So as the Chief of Data Operations, what is your role there?
I think operations being key. So, it's funny, I pretty much do whatever it takes to make sure that we are able to execute. So recently we hosted this International Population Data Linkage Conference. It's a global conference, about 600 people from 14 different countries. And, you know, for that event, I was essentially a master event planner. And so also, you know, we've submitted proposals for various research RFPs that have gone out, solicitations from, like National Institutes of Health or like National Science Foundation. And in that role, it's literally, kind of bringing together folks and helping them to figure out how do you what are we putting together for these grants. And so it's kind of it's a little bit like a startup within Northwestern. We're a small staff, and so everything that it's kind of an all hands on deck kind of thing, which is very different from roles I've had in the past. So
Oh, that's very, very cool. I love that. So how does that differ from what you do then at Mathematica? So what does your daily job look like at Mathematica?
At Mathematica, it's I think there's definitely some overlaps. So for both Northwestern and for Mathematica, what's key here is that we provide thought leadership around the areas of data, AI, interoperability. I think everybody knows that AI, the foundation of AI, is a lot of data. And Mathematica has a huge healthcare practice business unit, and it in a lot of ways, Northwestern, the Institute for AI and Medicine, is in the medical school. And so both of those roles allow me to get this perspective of sort of what's happening in research, what are our legislators concerned about, and what are the programs that are being implemented. And then like the lab is kind of that deep understanding and access to various types of data. So we have like 100% of Medicare, Medicaid data that we can access. We have spent a lot of time and effort kind of distilling and using publicly available data sets, which, as you know, it's not like you like, oh, well, here's a census data. Let me just grab it and go, right? There's a lot of cleanup that is involved and a lot of linkage. And so the lab essentially has both data scientists as well as, programmers who can kind of bring all of that data together to explore different questions. And so I would say my role at the lab is a little bit more, digging into the data. My role at Northwestern is a little bit more around like overall vision for where we want to be and where we want to head as an organization.
That's very cool. I love a good multitask.
I feel I'm very lucky because I think I get to do something I love like every day. I mean, even sometimes like expense reports and things, I still am, I'm very blessed.
That's amazing. Okay, well, let's talk about then how you got to be where you are today in these amazing roles. And I'm going to come back to a little bit then about working with data, but was this what you wanted to be when you grew up? So what was the dream? So like say you were 6 years old, what was the dream when you were where?
Well, so I didn't really have any dreams. I think I was just always so I'm an immigrant, so I came here when I was 7 years old from Vietnam, and it was always about hustling for like whatever the next thing was, making sure I got good grades. But my parents were both working all the time, so if I wanted to do anything, I kind of had to make sure it happened. And so I got a job, when I was 15, and I had been working since I was 15. And I went to Northwestern mainly because that's what you do, right? You go to school after you graduate from high school. And then I got into Northwestern, and I thought I would be like an econ major because I thought that was like, very like, hey, I don't know what I want to do, but I know I kind of think I want to work in the business world. And so for some reason I thought that was econ because, when you're a first generation college student, you don't really know what any of these things are, right?
Sure.
So I took my first econ class and just hated it. And so I switched my major to communications, and and then I just thought communications was so applicable to everything. it's fascinating on the research side just to kind of understand the different components of communication. And I just, Northwestern was is my alma mater as well, and it was an amazing place to be. But I honestly didn't think about where what I wanted to do in the future. I was just kind of like tactically going from one thing to the next. I got out of school and I was interning for this company in their HR department. And because I was a communications major, my internship was about rewriting their job descriptions and like administering employee surveys. And I guess they liked me because they wanted me to come and, work for them. And I was like, sure. And over the course of working for them, I ended up doing a little bit of everything within HR and realizing that HR wasn't really where I wanted to be. I think I was really good at it, but I didn't like, I was involved with a PeopleSoft implementation, which was a system like automating a lot of the things we did in HR. And I thought that was amazing. So I said, okay, I'm going to go back to school. And I went back to DePaul to get my master's in information systems. And at the time, business intelligence, data warehousing, data mining, these were all words that nobody really said. And then there was a class, and I was like, oh, I want to see what this class is all about. And when I took that class, many of my classmates were DBAs, and it just didn't make sense to them because they were really concerned with how to, have integrity of the data in order to drive actual functions, which is very different from understand how the data is connected in order to answer business questions. And I, and for me, it just completely clicked. And so I came out of graduate school, did some consulting in business intelligence, and then, loved the whole consulting thing. But then I had kids, and it was just the travel was really tough. And I thought to myself, I've been like a little bit of this industry and that industry. Like, let me try healthcare. So I entered into healthcare to essentially start up a data governance program at HCSC, Healthcare Service Corporation. And what I thought would be like a couple years, and as you and I know, it takes more than a couple years to, to stand up a data governance program. And then we stood that up. That was really like an amazing time. And then the Affordable Care Act was passed, and I led up the data strategy for that. So kind of like dissecting the law to figure out what about our data systems and our data flows and the data collection has to change in order for us to be able to be, one, report some of the new reporting requirements that were coming out of the law, and two, to be able to win within the marketplace. Because it was a very different way that we were going to operate in the individual marketplace than we had in the past. And so, and then after that, I got hooked on the whole policy and, oh my gosh, things can really change when laws change. And I went back into consulting, had another stint as an executive at Blue Cross Blue Shield Association. And then the pandemic happened, and Northwestern was launching this institute. And I was kind of between jobs and thought I would, spend 1 or 2 years helping to stand up this institute. And instead, I spent 4 years doing it and doing a lot of like little consulting on the side. And along comes somebody that I had worked with previously, went to Mathematica as the chief technology officer of health and came to me and said, hey, I have a job for you.
Oh,
That's
I
my
love that.
story. Yeah.
Wow, that is, I love the stories of how data people really just kind of follow this passion, this path of passion of okay, well, that's not really working for me. I'm really loving this over here. And so I'm gonna follow this over here and just this innate curiosity, not being afraid to go back to school and just and your story just emulates that so well. I have to ask, what was the first job when you were 15?
I was a library page. So I was one of those people in the back who shelved the books and went down to the basement to get, whatever archives you requested. So
Oh, I love that.
again,
The
more
virtual
data,
data
right?
catalog. Yeah.
Starts early.
That's awesome. Okay, so then tell me, how are you working with data today in your current jobs?
So a lot of the data today is about kind of understanding. So the big passion right now is that there's a lot of data within healthcare and in the world at large. With the advent of AI, it's very clear to people that AI shows its bias in a lot of different ways. And a lot of that is because, if you think about data, the way that models, those large language models have been trained, they've been trained on the data that they can get their hands on, which in many respects is digitized data. And digitized data lives within, this world we call the internet. And 40% of the world's population doesn't have access to the internet. And so it's not surprising when you look at that sometimes the AI that comes out of it, doesn't represent all of us. And so the chief piece of what I work on now and today is just to, one, talk to legislators about the fact that we live in a world where data is commoditized and like bought and sold, but you have no idea where that data might have come from. So we don't carry the provenance of the data as it gets repackaged, anonymized, like resold, right? And in some cases, not even anonymized, it's like literally your data being resold. And so, one is I think we need to start caring about where that data comes from and taking that metadata with it as it goes. Two is like when you start to look at, all of these AI models, there's kind of no transparency about how those models are created and what they're intended to do. And so if we want to create this world where AI is going to work for all of us, then we really need to think about, how do we make these models more transparent? And I spend a lot of my time in healthcare, and an example I like to tell people is, we sepsis, which is a systematic shutting down of like a lot of your bodily functions, is something that is a huge problem within the medical field. And so, a few years back, Epic developed the sepsis model that predicted who was going to get, severe sepsis, and then, like they, when they rolled it out. Across, 'cause sepsis is pretty much, or Epic is pretty much everywhere within the healthcare system. I think like a lot of the studies were like, oh, like it's 98% accurate in predicting, or 80 something percent accurate, which is all sounds really great. And then we started rolling it out nationally, and I think it didn't work out as well as they, like we thought it was going to work out. And just recently, University of Michigan had a study that came out that actually looked at the sepsis model and looked at how well it actually predicted within University of Michigan's environment. And it was something like 48%. So essentially a coin toss, right? So we've spent all this, effort and dollars in rolling out this model that is essentially as good as tossing a coin. And that is probably because of the data. We don't know what data it was trained on. We don't necessarily know, what that process in order to like operationalize it, looks like in each of the various health systems that it's become a part of. And so I think that there's a lot of work that we're doing within our industry net right now to kind of put some guidelines around, the use of AI, and then there's definitely a ton of regulations that are happening right now around like, how do we regulate this thing? Who's responsible? Who's accountable for what it does? That's a really long-winded answer your question.
No, I love it. And it's a very important answer, I think. And thank you for taking that on because we need advocates to ask these very important questions. So it's, and to talk to legislature about these very important questions.
Visit dataversity.net and expand your knowledge with thousands of articles and blogs written by industry experts, plus free live and on-demand webinars covering the complete data management spectrum. While you're there, subscribe to the weekly newsletter so you'll never miss a beat.
Yeah, so that's one aspect. And I guess the other aspect of what I do around data is right now we are trying to create tools that will help people to measure, you know, like the amount of bias within their systems. Like, how do we create a common data model for like health equity? Like, what do we mean when we say health equity? Depending on who I talk to, different things kind of resonate with them about bias, right? If you talk to somebody who, you know, is, you know, is not neurotypical or, you know, non-neurotypical, I'm probably saying it wrong, but if you speak with, like, you know, somebody who is not your typical individual, like, they will think of bias as, oh, well, I'm not seen in the data. And, you know, like, oftentimes people think that's like race or gender or ethnicity. But the reality is there's also bias in terms of access of healthcare, access of, like, you know, like I said before, just having access to the internet is a big one, right?
Sure.
And so, like, you know, I was just talking to a friend of mine who grew up in Minnesota, and he was like, yeah, it wasn't unusual for people to bleed out if they had an accident that involved, like, you know, a combine harvester, for instance. You know, because they're so far from any kind of health access. So deaths by accident are, like, huge within rural communities. And, you know, like, if you get into, like, a tussle with a combine harvester, I don't know if that actually makes it into your death record. I don't know if we're tracking. our death data is horrendous. And so, you know, like, there's a lot of these things that we have to start doing a better job of tracking so we know exactly what it is that is making or breaking our healthcare system.
Yeah, so we can do better.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Oh, I love it. What important, no wonder you're so excited and passionate about your job. It's really cool things that you're doing.
Yeah. And we want to make, like, I think one of the taglines I put on my profile is about liberating data or democratizing data. And it's not, when I say that, people are like, oh, so you just want data to be openly available. And that's not exactly what I'm saying. I'm saying that we, like, at Mathematica and at Northwestern, there are people who really, really understand, like, the all of the ins and outs of that data, but they are living in these little silos and they're not well known. My job with the Data Innovation Lab is to make that readily accessible and available to our clients. So, you know, we have access to data, we have experts, and if we don't have them in-house, we know where they live, and we can go get them. And so that they can help in, like, when you think about, hey, I have this idea for how I can improve XYZ, we can help you figure out if that's a viable idea or not. A lot of the consulting that I did, you know, sort of before I went to Mathematica was around, you know, with startups, and they would come to me and say, well, you know, I want to do X. And I think that, like, the business model is to get, you know, this entity, this stakeholder in healthcare to pay for it. And I would say, well, not really, because that's not how our healthcare system actually works, right? And that's a difficult thing for people to learn. And hopefully, you know, it gets easier to figure it out. But our healthcare system is very complex. The data gets collected for a lot of different purposes. And unless you know what the purpose of that collection is, you're not going to be able to understand where the gaps are.
It's very true. That's a lot to think about. I started going the rat down the rabbit hole of analysis. I'm like, okay,
Yeah.
in my mind.
I know. I know. I do that a lot.
So tell me then, as you've progressed through your career, what's been your biggest lesson so far in your career?
I think one of my biggest lessons, and it's what you said earlier about following your passion and like really, like with a lot of data. Well, one, I'm kind of a very analytic person, if I don't know if you could tell, but like I make every decision is like, okay, like let's weigh all the factors and let's look at the data. Do I have data for that or do I not? And that's, some of where I has gotten me in my career. But yeah, following your passion and making a very sort of clear-eyed decision about where the trade-offs are. Because obviously, when I went to work for Northwestern, I was kind of at like a sort of I don't know what to call it, plateau or not plateau, but kind of a break in my traditional corporate career. And I wasn't really sure that I wanted to go back into like the corporate world right away. And that was also at the same time the pandemic was happening. So it was nutty. Like I thought, okay, I'll do some interviews. And I interviewed with people like via Zoom like this. And it's just so hard for like for me to really get a sense of who people are via Zoom. I think we're all getting better at it, but at the time it was just very, very awkward. And I was, and then Northwestern, the institute, is part of the School of Medicine. And so at that time, it's like, I wasn't sure if they would really launch this thing or not. I started talking to them in March, and I think like August was when we actually, when I started with them. And so I guess all that to say, the lesson I've learned is, if you feel something is the right thing to do and it feels like it's the right place you need to go, I still think you need to gather your data and like kind of know, walk into it knowing where your trade-offs are. But it's really important to just like go with your gut, which is a terrible thing for a data person
But it's true. It's absolutely true.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. So, and as you worked with a lot of data and used a lot of data throughout your career, what is your definition of data?
So one of my dear friends, Beth Rudden, has a definition that I just stole from her, which is data is a representation of the human experience. And so I just think that's a perfect definition. Because, like it is just a representation and it is part of like how it describes our experience. And it doesn't describe all of it. It's very incomplete. But yeah.
I think that's one of my favorites now. I really, really like that. It's very appropriate. So then tell me, do you see the importance of data management and the number of jobs working with data increasing or decreasing over the next 10 years and why?
I think the jobs with data management will have to increase. I think that people didn't, they knew that data governance was important. But I don't think they realized how much importance there was in just kind of getting your data house in order. And then this whole AI thing came. And, like if you try to throw all of your data into a large language model, it's total nonsense. I was trying to review an article today and I was like, it was 40 pages. And I was like, hey, I was asking questions of it and it couldn't come up with the answer. So it's not, like I think we can't just throw everything at it, which is what, I think a lot of these companies, tech companies are trying to say, oh, give me enough data and I will make sense of it. That's just not true. And so this curation of the right data to put in, well, first of all, you don't want to throw everything in because the amount of energy that is required to process that much data is horrible. It's hugely costly for us as organizations and as a society, right? And so it's, ideally it's a curation of that data for the purpose that you need it to be for. So that's why I think data management as a discipline is something that, is going to continue to grow. But hopefully it will get easier. I don't know if I'm sure you remember like the days when we were like literally with Excel spreadsheets trying to like, do an impact analysis, of a change and like, trying to do all these filters to see, oh my gosh, how many systems am I going to have to touch because I changed like, one definition or one, attribute. And I think that that part, like the hopefully the tedious parts will get easier with technology.
Yeah, I agree. And I love that you bring in the responsibility of, curation in terms of the efficiency, because you're right. I mean, Microsoft, there's an article recently that Microsoft is looking to purchase a nuclear power plant and re-stand up a nuclear power plant just for to power just to power a AI. That's it. Solid power. Which is crazy. But it does. It takes a lot of power, a lot of so hopefully the technology, the hardware will also catch up and become more efficient, more power efficient than, but
Well, I do think like there's at with successive models, we are finding that it requires less energy and less effort to train them. And so I'm kind of hopeful for that. But I'm also hopeful for people kind of realizing like because this is such a massive amount of, like a power and data that's required, that people will say, to what end? Like, and start to realize that, not everything you do has to be AI. Like there are many things that you do in life that have nothing to do with AI. And just because you happen to have that at your fingertips doesn't mean you have to use it.
I still love a good spreadsheet, I gotta say.
I know. It's not very like I have Microsoft Copilot and I was trying to use it in Excel and it's just not very good in Excel.
Yet.
It's not very it's not great with structured data. Like in the way that we think about structured data, because the way that if you think about it, large language models are based on language. And that's not the same as like the data that we've been collecting, in kind of like a relational and, codified way. And so rightfully it doesn't really know how to do that. And the first language models didn't even know how to do math. And which was so perplexing to me because I'm like, wait, isn't it by nature? Isn't this AI math? Like that's what large language models are. It's your math, but you're terrible at doing math.
It's very true. I use it a lot to rewrite abstracts and things like that, but it's great at it.
If you like, I think one of the word problems I put in there was at the beginning was like if you had like $5 and you wanted to split it amongst your three kids, like how much would they each get or something like that, and it couldn't do it. Like it was like it was I don't know, it gave like $3 to each of them.
Little more than five.
Little more than five, exactly.
Well, now tell me, what advice then would you give to people looking to get into a career in data management?
I think the biggest thing that I look for when I'm hiring folks into these roles, and oh, by the way, I do have a couple of positions open. So, But what I'm looking for is somebody with intellectual curiosity and who wants to figure out like how can data answer those questions? Like like somebody who's very curious about like the latest technology and like whether or not it works or not, and takes this stance of like, okay, I think I know what I'm talking about, but let me try to prove it or try to disprove it. And I have this assumption, let me adversarially approach it so that, I'm trying to disprove my own theories. And so that like that na innate curiosity and the need to kind of find out more is probably the most useful attribute that someone can have going into this field.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And that is the commonality that we find amongst data people. So, like I mentioned as well. Oh, well, Nan, thank you so much for taking the time today. And I would be remiss if I didn't ask, if people want to learn more about Mathematica or about the lab at Northwestern. So the Institute for AI in Medicine at Northwestern, where would they go?
So I'm on LinkedIn pretty regularly, and I link to both in that, but it's mathematica.org. And then the Institute for Art of AI and Medicine, I think you have to just Google it because the URL is just way too long for me to say.
I understand. Well, we'll get that posted to the podcast page as well. Well, Nan, it has been such a pleasure to chat with you today.
Yes, likewise. Thank you for having me on.
Oh, thanks for joining us. And to all of our listeners out there, if you'd like to keep up to date in the latest podcast and in the latest in data management education, you can go to dataversity.net/subscribe. Until next time, stay curious, everyone. Thank you for listening to Dataversity Talks, a podcast brought to you by Dataversity. Subscribe to our newsletter for podcast updates and information about our free educational webinars at dataversity.net/subscribe.